the mustache mask. That innocent-looking and effective marketing tool, the dairy industry's milk mustache, is thus actually a mask that hides the most sickening and inhumane industry practically imaginable. These docile vegetarian mothers and their unfortunate children are dominated from birth to death, unnaturally fattened on animal flesh so humans can fatten themselves on dairy products and cow flesh. One would almost hope that for their enormous sacrifice, the dairy cows would at least be supplying humans with something beneficial. And yet the deeper justice is inescapable. By killing them, we kill ourselves. By enslaving them, we enslave ourselves. By sickening them, we sicken ourselves. Mother cows, like all lactating mammals, produce high levels of estrogen in their milk. It is not healthy for humans to take in this high estrogen load at any age. One obvious result is that young girls' bodies are unnaturally pushed to become sexually mature at an early age. The average age of menarche, of first menstruation, instead of being 17 as it was in the mid-19th century, is now 12.5 years. This was made startlingly clear in Japan after World War II, where in the space of just one or two generations after dairy products were introduced there, the average age of menarche went from 15.2 to 12.5. According to researcher Kerry Saunders, quote, "Both African villages and the Chinese have retained many of their dietary traditions of eating plant-based food, and they both average an onset of female puberty at 17 years of age. The unnaturally early menarche in our culture causes untold anguish, with unnecessary teen pregnancies, abortion dilemmas and debates, and unnatural physical, psychological, and social stress that is simply a result of pushing our girls into sexual maturity too early, just as we do to the young cow slaves on the dairy. Even as they eat milk products, instigating the rape, exploitation, and death of other female animals, women may be viewed simultaneously as meat by men, mere objects to be used. Ironically, just as cows are forced to have unnaturally large and swollen mammary glands to overproduce milk for the dairy industry, the resulting foods produce unnaturally large mammary glands in the women who consume them, a feature that is prized in our herding culture and further reinforces women's status as mere objects for the eyes of men. The interconnected dairy and meat industries perpetuate the patriarchal herding mentality that sees both animals and women as, quote, meat, to be milked and eaten in one case and used sexually in the other. There are other disasters linked with human consumption of cow's milk products. Charles Atwood, M.D., and T. Colin Campbell, Ph.D., have written, quote, "Human epidemiological studies have strongly related animal protein consumption to various cancers. Of all animal protein, there is strong experimental evidence that casein, the principal protein of milk, is especially capable of promoting cancer development. What are the other problems with milk and dairy products? The majority of practicing pediatric allergists insist that more than half of their patients are allergic to one or more of milk's more than 24 proteins. Their allergy symptoms include eczema, asthma, middle ear infections, sinus infections, rhinitis, gastroenteritis, and allergic colitis, conditions responsible for 80-90% of doctor's office visits." End quote. 80-90% of doctor's office visits. It's not surprising that dairy products are promoted so heavily by the pharmaceutical media banking complex and that plant-based diets are discouraged. The huge pathogen load that is permissible in pasteurized milk, 5 million pathogens per cup, more than 200 times the load found in grains, vegetables, fruits, legumes, and nuts, if uncontaminated in handling, is a constant stress on the immune system and may increase risks for a whole spectrum of diseases as well as cancers of all types, especially breast and prostate cancer. Cow's milk contains large amounts of pus, which is inevitable due to the high levels of bacteria in the traumatized udders of dairy cows, and pasteurization does not stem the incoming pathogen tide. Some pasteurized milk samples bought and tested by Consumer Reports contained as many as 30 million to 700 million microbes per cup. These pathogens, besides increasing risks for gastroenteritis, strep, and a variety of other illnesses, are also known to promote tooth decay, and babies who go to sleep nursing a bottle with cow's milk are well known to risk partial or even complete dissolution of their teeth. According to researchers cited by Frank Oskey, MD, eating dairy products is linked with diarrhea, iron deficiency anemia, gastrointestinal bleeding, kidney disease, eczema, bronchitis, allergies, asthma, hay fever, rheumatoid arthritis, hives, allergy to penicillin, leukemia, multiple sclerosis, and dental decay, as well as to the diabetes, obesity, and atherosclerosis caused by the high fat and cholesterol content. The protein in milk, particularly casein, while perfect for calves, is too large and difficult for us to digest. Calves have a particular enzyme, renin, not present in humans, that coagulates and helps break down casein. According to renowned nutrition researcher T. Colin Campbell, quote, "Cow's milk protein may be the single most significant chemical carcinogen to which humans are exposed," end quote. On top of this, cow's milk is rich in natural growth hormone to induce the newborn calf to grow many hundreds of pounds in just the first year of life. This growth-inducing substance, named by scientists insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1, is absolutely identical molecularly to the IGF-1 in humans that spurs our growth as children. The extra dose of growth factor we receive in cow's milk causes us to grow unnaturally and not just in height. I remember as a child raised in a typically heavy dairy-eating household that my teeth were way too large for my mouth, and my orthodontist, in sizing the bands needed to straighten them, exclaimed, quote, "Wow, looks like you've got cow's teeth," end quote. In adults, studies have shown that excess IGF-1 from eating dairy products may increase the risk of cancer. Since we are not growing, as adults we normally have very little, if any, IGF-1 in our blood to promote the growth of new cells. The IGF-1 that enters our bloodstream when we eat dairy products has serious consequences. Recall that in the trillions of cells in our bodies, there are naturally some cancer cells erupting here and there all the time. With a healthy immune system, these cells are easily discovered and destroyed. Enter IGF-1 from cow's milk. This growth factor is like gasoline thrown on a fire, stimulating sudden, rapid cell division in a small, easy-to-handle cancerous cell growth. The immune system, already overworked by the pathogen load and toxins in the dairy products, may not be able to contain it. The IGF-1 in dairy products may actually be promoting cancer, yet famous people, including health professionals, appear in expensive advertising campaigns sporting milk mustaches supporting the dairy industry. Eggs, more domination of the feminine. As with dairy products, when we buy eggs, we instigate theft and violence against horribly abused females and contribute to environmental contamination, social pathology, and disease. In egg agribusiness, the same principles apply that we have been discussing with the dairy industry, taken to even further extremes. Sentient females are categorized and reduced to mere monetary units of production, imprisoned in unimaginably crowded, stressful, and filthy conditions, their eggs stolen, and then, when they are no longer capable of producing at a high enough level, they are brutally killed. Chicken eggs are toxic for humans in the manner of all animal products. First, they are made up of animal protein, saturated fat, and cholesterol, all three of which clog arteries, acidify blood and tissues, impair the immune system, and stress the body in a variety of ways, as has been discussed. Eggs, in fact, are the most concentrated packets of cholesterol available in supermarkets. Second, eggs concentrate noxious pesticide, chemical, hormonal, and bacterial residue. Third, eating eggs is eating the vibrations of misery, as will become evident below when we look at methods of egg production. Like all the animals whose bodies are used to produce food for our dining tables, chickens are seen as mere commodities. Individual chickens and egg-laying operations are so cheap to replace that they are virtually worthless and are treated as such. They spend their lives in battery cages, small wire prisons 14 to 16 inches high and 18 to 20 inches across, each containing 4 to 8 hens, packed in so tightly that they can never spread their wings. The wires of the cages chafe most of their feathers away, leaving them naked, wounded, and unprotected. They may get their heads, wings, or legs stuck between the wires and thus starve to death, their rotting corpses endured by the other hens in their cage. Their feet are painfully cut by the wires, which can become embedded in their flesh as their feet grow around them. The battery cages are stacked 4 or 5 rows high, with the feces and urine from those above falling on the heads and bodies of the birds beneath them, finally landing in a stinking waste pit into which some chickens who manage somehow to escape their prisons fall and slowly die. As with the dairy industry, the egg industry is founded upon the total domination of the feminine and upon the manipulation of female bodies to maximize profits with no regard to the outrageous cruelty involved. And because chickens are smaller and held in even lower esteem than cows, they are brutalized even more blatantly in the quest for cheap eggs. Female chicks are routinely debeaked, an exceedingly traumatic operation in which about half of the beak is chopped off. The hot blade cuts through the most sensitive nerve tissue in their beaks, causing such acute pain that the bird's heart rate increases by over 100 beats per minute. Many die on the spot. For those who survive, the chronic pain from this procedure may last their whole lives and interfere with eating. Male chicks are unneeded, so workers mass annihilate them, either by live suffocation and crushing in large plastic trash bags, or by dumping them living into machines with rotating blades like wood chippers that turn them into instant chicken feed or fertilizer. Hens who no longer produce enough eggs have also been disposed of by being thrown living into the spinning blades of wood chipping machines. The egg industry acknowledges the huge number of diseases and syndromes that are inherent in the battery system. Painful foot and leg deformities, as well as broken and tangled wings and legs from the wire cages. Calcium deficiency, as well as painful prolapsed and distended uteruses from being forced to produce unnaturally large quantities of eggs. Caged layer osteoporosis, which is the loss of bone tissue directly attributed to being immobilized. Fatty liver syndrome and swollen head syndrome due to poor quality food and air and being forced to live constantly in filth and stress. Lung and eye problems from the ammonia-drenched air, lost eyes from henpecks by desperate cage mates, and salmonella in which the hen's oviducts become infested with salmonella bacteria, passing the infection to consumers through the eggs. It is well established that antibiotics are given to battery hens in basically 100% of egg operations to control the bacterial diseases that thrive in these squalid conditions. Antibiotics are also found to increase egg production, but as with all creatures, including humans, antibiotics increase other problems since they disrupt and kill the intestinal microflora that are necessary for digestion and elimination, thus weakening the immune system. Toxic pesticide residues from the feed, antibiotic residues, and hormonal, chemical, and pathogenic bacteria residues all concentrate in the fat and eggs of these hens, making them extremely unhealthy to consume. The tens of thousands of chickens crammed into one egg production shed have nowhere to move and no way to nest, establish social order, or in any way express their natural intelligence or purpose. The artificial lighting schedule that keeps them in almost continuous darkness, and the feed and drugs are all designed with only one goal: to cut costs and maximize the number of eggs that drop from the hens' uteruses and roll down the slanted wire cage bottoms to be whisked away on the conveyor belt. On modern chicken operations, this is over 250 eggs per year, more than 2.5 times the number hens would lay under more natural conditions. In nature, a hen is particular about her nest and often chooses the right place to lay her precious egg in partnership with a rooster. When she actually lays the egg in her carefully prepared nest, it is, quote, obviously for the hen a moment full of pride and satisfaction, end quote. Contrast this with the following description of egg laying for a caged chicken, quote, the frightened battery hen starts to panic as she vainly searches for privacy and a suitable nesting place in the crowded but bare wire cage. Then she appears to become oblivious to her surroundings, struggling against the cage as though trying to escape. Take a moment to imagine yourself as a layer chicken. Your home is a crowded cage with a wire floor that causes your feet to hurt and become deformed. There's no room to stretch your legs or flap your wings, and they become weak from lack of exercise. But at the same time, you can never be still because there is always one of your miserable cellmates who needs to move about. One of the other chickens is always picking on you, and you cannot get away, except by letting others sit on top of you. The air is filled with dust and flying feathers that stick to the sides of the cage, splattered with chicken shit from the inmates in the cage upstairs. It is hard to breathe. There is a choking stench of ammonia in the air from the piles of manure under the cages, and you don't feel at all well. The flies are unbearable despite the insecticide sprayed in the air and laced in your food to kill the fly larvae before they mature. The food, never green and fresh, seldom varies and tastes always of the chemical additives and drugs needed to keep you alive. Eventually, despite your wretchedness and anguish, and the tormented din of thousands of birds shrieking their pain together, you lay an egg and watch it roll out of sight. But the joy of making a nest, of giving birth, of clucking to your chicks is absent. Laying the egg is an empty, frustrating, and exhausting ritual. End quote. All family and social and natural life is destroyed. These hens know neither mothers nor children, neither mates nor earth nor sun. They are born in hatcheries, debeaked, and then sentenced to the caged slavery of egg production. When a population of thousands of hens in an egg operation is at the end of its laying cycle, the hens will either be gassed and killed, since their tortured bodies have so little flesh they aren't worth the trouble of shipping to slaughter, or they may be slaughtered for the low-grade meat used in chicken soup and pet food. Often, though, the hens are forced molted first to shock their bodies into another cycle of egg laying. This is done by withholding food and water and administering a combination of drugs, including hormones. The forced starvation may last up to 2 weeks, typically killing many birds in the process. After they have been force molted once or twice, soon to be slaughtered for chicken soup, the birds are roughly yanked from their cages, tossed into trucks, and taken away to make room for the next wave of hen slaves. We can perhaps be born into no worse hell in this universe than being a female chicken on an industrial egg farm in the United States. In so-called free-range egg operations, the hens are all typically debeaked, as in standard egg factories, and males are all brutally killed at birth. The chickens are still treated as objects, pushed to produce, and killed cruelly when they are no longer profitable. The term free-range has surprisingly little legal meaning, and there are thus no rules governing the amount of space a free-range hen must have, so though their confinement may be less extreme than the usual battery cages, they are nevertheless typically crammed together in enormous stinking sheds where they never see the light of day. The web of connections. Female cows and chickens are ruthlessly dominated to provide products that are vital and healthy for their offspring, community, and species, but cause disease, pollution, hunger, and suffering when consumed by humans. When we steal their milk and eggs and kill their children, we set up the conditions for the same to happen to us. The fates of cow mothers and human mothers, cow babies and human babies, ultimately run parallel. If we allow corporations to steal, use, and kill cow and chicken babies, it will happen to our babies also. In fact, it is already happening. The negative effects of consuming dairy products and eggs on individual health are linked to negative consequences for our world ecosystems and our culture. Everything is connected. The consumption of dairy products and eggs is linked with allergies, skin disorders, cancer, heart disease, strokes, diabetes, and a laundry list of other ailments. The arsenal of products and procedures marketed by the medical industry to combat these unnecessary ailments, all of which are major sources of pollution and disempowerment. The enormous profits accumulated by the agribusiness, chemical, pharmaceutical, and banking industries from our domination of female animals. The social inequality and injustice that this promotes, giving rise to elitism and further conflict. The environmental and human health effects of agricultural runoff, which is poisoning rivers, killing fish, contributing to human cancer, and causing red tides that inflict respiratory disease. The lives lost in wars caused by spiraling demand for petroleum and by desperation as water rights go to rich agribusiness dairy and chicken operations funded by U.S. banks in third world countries while poor people face chronic thirst and contaminated water. The web of connections surrounding our consumption of dairy products and eggs is vast and includes all beings. When we feed on other animals' milk and eggs, we are feeding on their fear and despair, on the violence that a patriarchal mentality systematically enforces on them. If we look deeply, we'll see that this mentality breeds violence in our lives as well. Should we, who long for mercy, freedom, and joy, and for a more enlightened society that supports peace and respect for our earth and the sacredness of all life, be the agents of such violence? When we make the connection between our culturally induced desire to eat dairy and egg products and the cruelty to vulnerable mothers that this will necessarily entail, our intelligence and compassion are nourished and we naturally begin to make new choices. There are plenty of substitutes for animal-derived milk products and eggs, and they are becoming increasingly available as more of us make these connections. Reviving Sophia. Dominating others requires us to disconnect from them and from aspects of ourselves as well. In exploiting dairy cows and hens, we dominate them not just for their flesh, skin, bones, and the other body parts that we can use or sell. We specifically exploit their uteruses and mammary glands. This inhumane desecration of the most intimate and life-giving functions of the feminine principle, that of giving birth to new life and of tenderly nourishing that life, harms us perhaps as deeply as it does the cows, though our wounds may be less obvious. Many spiritual teachers have pointed out that when we harm others, we harm ourselves even more severely. The hard-heartedness of the killer and exploiter is in itself a terrible punishment, because it is a loss of sensitivity to the beauty and sacredness of life. That loss may go unrecognized, but the life itself, armored, violent, and competitive, is lived as a struggle of separateness and underlying fear, and its relations with others are poisoned. By enslaving and cruelly exploiting cow mothers and babies in dairy operations, we attack and injure the sacred feminine within ourselves as well as in nature. This is an attack on our essential being, on our sense of nurturing life and protecting the vulnerable. These are truly terrible seeds to be sowing, for the feminine principle within us all is the seat of loving kindness, receptivity, caring, and the urge to nurture and protect. In attacking our own inner feminine principle, we become, as a culture, harder and more separate, competitive, aggressive, and self-centered. Ironically, we become commodities ourselves, controlled and enslaved by a system of our own making, yet we don't realize it because we've been taught to disconnect. We learn to cover our ears to block out the plaintive cries of cow mothers on dairies. We block out the cries of human mothers whose babies are taken from them, thousands every day, by easily preventable starvation. We block out the cries of mothers whose babies are killed by bombs and bullets fired by boys serving the military death machine. Who will hear or heed our cries if we don't heed the cries of these mothers? Liberating and honoring the feminine principle is perhaps the most pressing task in our culture's evolution toward peace, sustainability, and spiritual maturity. The feminine principle, cross-culturally, is concerned fundamentally with nurturing, receptivity, making connections, intuition, and bringing forth a new life. In our herding culture, these qualities are not respected because the work of herding animals requires men to become hard and cruel and to emphasize their separateness from and superiority to animals, nature, and the life-giving processes of the feminine. This has led to a patriarchal mentality concerned fundamentally with domination, control, separation, rational analysis, commodification, war, and killing. Its basic dictum in human affairs follows from its fundamental herding orientation towards animals, which is that might makes right. And yet the feminine principle is still alive, longed for, and beloved, because we know at the deepest levels that this is a vital aspect of our essential nature. Veneration of the sacred feminine goes back many millennia, predating the rise of our herding culture, and we still remember this even though the ancient goddesses have been supplanted by the decidedly male deities now recognized by conventional Western religion and science, the Lord God Jehovah and reason. The Greek term for the third person of the Trinity, the Holy Spirit, Hagia Sophia, or Holy Wisdom, was feminine, though this was lost when translated later into Latin as the masculine Spiritus Sanctus, which made all three aspects of the Christian Trinity male, to the detriment of women, animals, nature, and our culture's spiritual depth. The loss of Sophia, Holy Wisdom, was inevitable as the domination and male violence required by commodifying animals continued to spread and intensify. But Sophia, though repressed, could never die and has lived on, disguised as Mary, as Beatrice, and as the Paraclete, another term for the Holy Spirit, Greek for Comforter. One form this takes is the resilient archetype of the fairy godmother, symbolizing the benevolent feminine process mediating between the visible and invisible realms. Philo Sophia, literally the love of wisdom, was originally a quest for Sophia as intuitive wisdom that would be spiritually liberating and significant. As the feminine principle and intuition were increasingly trivialized and despised, however, Western philosophy lost much of its potential depth and eventually became a shallow accomplice to science. Sophia's symbol is the cup, grail, or chalice, which, unlike the traditional symbol of male divinity, the sword, spear, blade, or thunderbolt, is non-violent and non-threatening. It holds, nurtures, fills, mixes, connects, and gives birth. The cauldron and bowl represent the feminine receptivity that is essential to intuitive wisdom and spiritual maturity. Sophia's cup eventually became the central image in one of our most fundamental stories, that of the Holy Grail, in which sword-bearing knights searched in vain to find the lost Grail cup. At deep levels, we recognize that what has been lost is the feminine approach to wisdom, and that an unbalanced masculine approach of unbridled reductionism brings war, disease, and perversity to the degree it has repressed the feminine principle and spurned a partnership with the wisdom that connects, nurtures, and gives form to life. In myths, fairy tales, poetry, drama, art, and other deep cultural expressions, we can see the loss mourned everywhere, from Odysseus, Orestes, Antigone, and the Ramayana through Faust, Galahad, Lear, and Parsifal, to modern epics like Star Wars and The Lord of the Rings. The true self or radiant indwelling Christ nature is repressed or lost and is replaced by a false self, a persona or mask that is insecure, fragmented, proud, and convinced of its separateness and need to dominate and control. In fairy tales, one way this is expressed is through archetypal tales involving a wrongful ruler who usurps the throne and drives the country and people into war, poverty, and ruin. We sometimes see this mythic archetype thrust strikingly into reality on the world's political stage, with false and rigged elections and the disastrous consequences of administrations that further the oppressive and violent herder mentality by propagating war and the interests of a privileged elite at the expense of disadvantaged people, animals, ecosystems, and future generations. At a deeper symbolic level, the mask and the usurper represent not only the deluded and conniving ego, but also our native herding culture, which has spread and conquered less aggressive cultures and still enforces its mentality of domination and its core practice of commodifying and eating animals. The usurper continues today, attacking nature, women, animals, and the vulnerable as it strives to consolidate control in a few elite hands. It derives power from the public's regular daily meals of hidden violence. Consuming and killing have become defining activities, fed by the disconnectedness and repressed guilt that accompany our suppression of the feminine principle. Beings who are the subjects of their lives are forced into the role of mere objects, and both people and animals end up becoming things. The way hunters, fishers, and herders look at animals, the way corporate developers look at nature, and the way men are typically taught to look at women, and how women typically learn to be looked at by men, are all part of this process. Enormous suffering is inevitable in all this, polluting relationships and eroding the spiritual sensitivity that sees beyond materialistic I-it dualisms to the sacred subjects that are always present in living beings. As individuals and as a culture, our ability to heal, transform, and evolve beyond this old, defiling mentality is tied to our food choices more than to anything else. To meditate for world peace, to pray for a better world, and to work for social justice and environmental protection while continuing to purchase the flesh, milk, and eggs of horribly abused animals exposes a disconnect that is so fundamental that it renders our efforts absurd, hypocritical, and doomed to certain failure. We are all hearing a call from our inner wisdom to reawaken respect for the feminine principle. Can we ever be successful in answering this call while still imprisoning, raping, abusing, and killing millions of mothers just for our pleasure, continuing our subservience to social pressure and indoctrination? The inner feminine is our intuition, our sensitivity, and our ability to sense the profound interconnectedness of events and beings, and it is vital to peace, wisdom, joy, intelligence, creativity, and spiritual awakening. With every baby calf stolen from her mother and killed, with every gallon of milk stolen from enslaved and broken mothers, with every thrust of the raping sperm gun, with every egg stolen from a helpless, frantic hen, and with every baby chick killed or locked for life in a hellish nightmare cage, we kill the sacred feminine within ourselves. By ordering and eating products from the industrial herding complex that dominates the feminine with an iron fist, we squelch our opportunities for maturing to higher levels of understanding, sensitivity, and compassion. We remain merely ironic in our quests. Our welfare is ultimately dependent on the welfare of others. By freeing and encouraging others, we are liberated and encouraged. We can never sever our connection to all beings, but we can ignore and violate it, planting seeds of tragedy and suffering. Honoring our natural place in the web of life by eating the foods intended for us will plant seeds of abundance, love, and freedom, whatever our religion may be. Our prayers for peace will bear fruit when we are living the prayer for peace, and most importantly, when we offer peace to those who are at our mercy and who also long for peace and the freedom to live their lives and fulfill their purposes. Achieving peace among human beings, from the household to international battlefields, depends upon treating each other with respect and kindness. This will be possible when we first extend that respect and kindness to those who are at our mercy and who cannot retaliate against us. If we are sincere in our quest for human peace, freedom, and dignity, we have no choice but to offer this to our neighbors, the animals of this earth. Cultivating awareness, we can transcend the imposed view that animals are mere food objects. With this, we will see consumerism, pornography, and the disconnectedness that leads inexorably to slavery and self-destruction evaporate. As the mentality of domination and exclusivism fades, we will be able to heal divisions of gender, race, and class.